After a very long and boring sermon, the congregation filed out of the church, saying nothing to the preacher. Towards the end of the line was a thoughtful person who always commented on the sermons. "Pastor, today your sermon reminded me of the peace and love of God," they said. The pastor was thrilled. "No one has ever said anything like that about my preaching before." "Well," said the person, "it reminded me of the peace of God because it passed all understanding. And it reminded me of the love of God because it endured forever." Well, I hope today that you will understand what I'm talking about, and I can promise you I'm not going on forever. The theme for today is pursuing peace, and I'm going to look at this from a theological and a psychological perspective. I will begin by defining peace and how a lack of peace might impact us. I will consider a story of conflict and what we might learn from that. And Paul experienced an enormous amount of conflict. So what did he learn and what has he got to teach us? So what is peace? The Hebrew word for peace is shalom, which implies harmony, wholeness, and well-being. The English word peace can be defined as a period of mental or emotional calm, a period of tranquility, of freedom from disturbance or conflict. When we picture someone at peace, we might imagine them as being relaxed and at rest. I find the imagery of a lake as a useful visual aid when discussing peace. When a lake is at peace, it is calm, still and tranquil. If a stone is thrown in, there is a disturbance and ripples spread out and disappear, and then peace descends again. If a storm comes and a strong wind begins to blow, the lake can be whipped up into a frenzy. The same is true for us. Sometimes our peace can be disturbed by something that is short-lived and may quickly settle down again. At other times, what seems like a gale can destroy our peace, and finding peace again seems very difficult. So what can disturb our sense of peace? Well, many things. Things may go wrong in our lives and we feel powerless and out of control. Our relationships have difficulties and break down. We do or say something and someone is upset with us. We watch the news and it's filled with gloom and catastrophe. We worry over job security and health problems. We are too busy, and as Rachel prayed this morning, we feel we're running around like headless chickens. And as my husband very kindly reminded me, being stuck in a traffic jam certainly takes away my peace. And that traffic jam is actually in Jakarta, and apparently it lasted for 22 days, according to the title on the photograph. What is it like for us when we don't have peace? A lack of peace can affect us spiritually. We may feel disconnected from God and our faith may weaken. Our thoughts can be affected and may become chaotic and focused on bad things and negative ideas. Our behaviour can be affected as we rush around frantically trying to stay in control. And of course, a lack of peace affects our feelings. We may feel in turmoil, stressed, anxious, insecure, and frightened that life is spiralling out of control. An absence of peace can also affect us physically in our bodies. It can cause an excess of adrenaline, leading to sleeplessness and high blood pressure. It is important to note that sometimes an underlying physical condition or a chemical imbalance can cause people to be agitated and to lack peace. If this continues for a long time, a visit to the doctor might be a good idea. So how can this passage from Philippians chapter 4 help us to understand how we can find peace and also stay peaceful? Well, the verses that were read to us today do not start off in a peaceful way. There is no calm or tranquility. Paul tells us that peace in the Philippian church has been disturbed by Euodia and Syntyche, who cannot agree and have fallen out. It's not clear from Paul's letter exactly what has happened, but we can hypothesize that possibly a small disagreement between two people has escalated into a humdinger of an argument and a subsequent rift. The fact that Paul has heard about this disagreement from prison in Ephesus probably means that it's been going on for some time, because as in those days, communication was very slow. He had possibly heard about it from Epaphroditus by a letter or word of mouth, because of course there were no telephones, internet, email, social media, etc. So how do you feel when you hear about Euodia and Syntyche? They were certainly not experiencing peace, and I would imagine the people around them were not feeling very peaceful either. How would we feel if they were in our church? Would we feel the need to take sides, or would we just ignore what was going on and hope they would sort themselves out? If we encounter such situations either in the church or outside, we can feel very uncomfortable, and it can rob us of our peace. Many of us find it very difficult to know what to do when faced with conflict, or when other people have a different opinion. We don't like conflicts in churches, do we? We like everything to be calm and peaceful, because we're supposed to be loving and to be peacemakers. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 9, we read, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons or daughters of God." I wonder sometimes whether we've got confused. And instead of being peacemakers, we have become people pleasers. People pleasers tiptoe around other people and try not to upset them, because they feel responsible for everybody else's feelings. People pleasers don't say what they think because they don't want to upset anyone. They keep their real thoughts and feelings inside. Rather than bringing peace, people pleasing can lead to many problems. So, mission impossible. People pleasers face an impossible challenge, because, as we all know, it's impossible to please everybody all of the time. Each individual is only responsible for their own feelings and cannot be responsible for everybody else's. This doesn't mean that we shouldn't be loving and kind and do what we can to help and support each other. But at the end of the day, if someone is still not happy with us, it is their responsibility and not ours. Chocolate with chili. You may wonder why I've got that there. We'll find out. Some time ago at work, Mark was given some chocolate with chili. And he thought, yum, this is nice. Until a few seconds later, when the chili hit and it nearly blew his head off. By choosing to always please people, people pleasers can lose peace themselves. They tiptoe around people, always doing what they want and never expressing their own needs. Outwardly, like the chocolate, they might seem nice and compliant and be smiling, but inwardly, they might be seething with resentment and anger, like the chili. In a way, this is dishonest and inauthentic behavior. The attitude of the heart and mind is out of sync with what is being seen on the outside. It is also not very healthy emotionally or mentally, because eventually that person may not be able to hold in that anger, and it might spill out in an inappropriate way, like the chili might blow their heads off. Anxiety. People pleasing can lead to a constant state of anxiety. People pleasers are always second guessing what they need to do to keep those around them happy, and this can be exhausting and very stressful. Not about the Father's business. People pleasers may not be doing what they should be doing for God because they are doing the will of other people. The people they are trying to please are controlling them, moulding them, and shaping them, not God. If someone is asked to do something they don't want to do but are afraid to say no because they don't want to upset people, they may then not have the time or energy to be doing what God has called them to do. I also wonder if sometimes we might find it easier to say no to God than we do to each other. So people-pleasing may not bring peace, but rather the opposite. I used to spend a lot of time worrying about what I said to people. Did I say the wrong thing? Did they misunderstand me? Have I upset them? Over time, I realized that I didn't want to keep on living in a constant state of worry and second-guessing, and I have tried since then to be different. Despite what you might think, I know I'm not perfect. I do make mistakes, and I do sometimes say the wrong thing and possibly upset people. Now, if I think I might have said something that might have upset someone, I will just go to that person, and I'm honest with them and try to explain. If I have upset them, then I can apologize, and I do not need to spend a lot of time worrying about something that might not actually have happened. As Christians, we want to follow the example of Jesus, and he was not a people pleaser. If he had been, he would not have argued with the religious leaders. He would not have overturned the tables of the money changers in the temple, and he would not have died on a cross, but would have become the warrior type of Messiah that the Jews wanted. Jesus was a God pleaser. He did the will of his Father, and surely this is what we are called to do, to seek God's will at all times and to be about kingdom business. We cannot do this effectively when we are so concerned about upsetting those around us. As Christians, we are called to be loving, and as it says in Hebrews 12, verse 14, we need to make every effort to live at peace with everyone. So I imagine we may all be inclined to be people, to do a bit of people pleasing. However, on the other side of this, there are the people who need to be pleased. Some people are so used to getting their own way that when they are crossed, they may throw a tantrum and show their displeasure, making other people feel responsible for their feelings. There can't be people pleasers without people who need pleasing. Perhaps we need to examine our own behaviour and check that we are not the ones causing other people anxiety because we are not very nice when we are upset. So going back to Euodia and Syntyche, what can we as peacemakers do practically if a difference of opinion with someone robs us of our peace? First of all, we need to be honest. We need to be honest with each other and allow others to be honest with us. We should be able to speak the truth in love and not fall out over it. Allow differences. Just because others have a different opinion to us, it doesn't mean that we have to be divided. We can agree to disagree. I'm sure that when Paul tells Euodia and Syntyche to agree with each other, he didn't mean that they both had to have the same opinions. Rather, they had to put those opinions aside in order to love and forgive and to get along with each other. They should have been united as sisters in God's family and in the cause of the gospel. Don't delay. It's important to deal with disagreements quickly and not let things fester. As we all know from experience, the amount of washing up after each meal is manageable. leave it for several days, and it becomes a mountain, as I'm sure many of us have told our children at various times in their lives. In the same way, Paul's advice in Ephesians 4, verse 26, to not go to bed angry is very relevant here. If we have fallen out with someone, it's better to sort it out as soon as we can. Change perspective. We can pray and ask God to help us to see things from the other person's point of view and to enable us to have a forgiving spirit. Be gentle. In Philippians 4, Paul encourages us to let our gentleness to be evident to all. And so when we are trying to resolve conflict, we need to do it gently. Seek help. Sometimes if two people have fallen out, as in the Philippians passage, it needs someone else who is trustworthy to mediate or intervene. After dealing with the animosity at the beginning of Philippians 4, Paul then goes on to the verses 4 to 9 to give us some advice on how we can find peace in our lives. Rejoice. First of all, Paul encourages us to rejoice at all times. Then in case his readers don't get the message, he says it again, rejoice. Paul is encouraging us to choose to rejoice, to remember all the good things that God has done for us and to be thankful for them. Paul was in prison when he wrote Philippians, and yet he still wants to encourage rejoicing. I wonder if we were in his position, whether we would be talking about rejoicing or would we more likely be complaining? I think I might be complaining. Paul was able to rejoice and find peace in such difficult circumstances because he felt secure in God's love and plan for his life. He knew that even though circumstances might be against him, God was still in control. Be positive. In verse 8, Paul encourages the readers to think positively. He wants them to notice all the good things that are going on around them and to think about them. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. In other words, don't think negatively about bad things, think positively about good things. For some of us, good things are hard to spot, and we may need to practice looking out for them. We can spend time looking at a flower or a sunset and just enjoy that moment, experiencing and appreciating the beauty before us. When we are with family or friends and we feel a sense of well-being or fun or being loved and accepted, we can take time to enjoy the moment and to file it away in our minds to think about another time. Before we go to sleep, we can look back over the day and find things to be thankful for and make a note of them. We can write down or memorize Bible verses and meditate on them whenever we are inclined to worry. This is how we can train our minds to recognize the good things around us and to appreciate that we are loved by God, and this can bring us peace. Trust God. Paul also talks about the topic which probably more than anything robs people of peace. That is anxiety and worry. There was a lot of anxiety at the time in the pagan world about which God to please. And even if they all tried very hard, the people were unsure about whether the gods were pleased or not. Paul writes, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Paul reassures the Christian believers that the true God was different to the false gods. He is interested in every area of our lives. If it matters to us, it matters to God. So we can tell God about all our worries, trust him with them, and he will give us peace. He takes away our worries and he replaces them with peace. I've told this story before, but if ever I was worried about anything as a child, I would sit on my dad's lap and tell him about it. And he would always say, "Do your best, leave the rest, and don't worry." And somehow that made everything all right. I think this is a lovely picture of how our relationship should be with God. We go and we tell him our worries, and then we leave them with him, and we go away with a lighter heart. If we choose to trust God with our worries, we can leave them with him and find peace. Some of us are more inclined to be anxious than others, so here are a few other practical ways for dealing with worry when it robs us of peace. Write things down. Writing things down can sometimes help. Seeing our worries on paper externalizes them, taking them out of our heads and helps us to feel more in control. Tell someone. It may help to tell someone we trust, but as the saying goes, a trouble shared is a trouble halved. A lot of what I do in counselling is listening to people's worries, and somehow by sharing their worries, people can feel a sense of relief and release from worry. Use distraction. Distraction is a very good way of bringing down anxiety levels. Worrying is like chewing the cud. We get a thought in our heads that causes anxiety, and we keep chewing on it, going over it again and again. A way to stop this happening is to distract ourselves and fill our minds with something else, so there's no room for worry. As already mentioned, thinking about good things fills our minds with other more positive stuff. And procrastinate. Worry can be delayed. Don't worry today about something that's happening next week. If you have an exam on Tuesday, decide to start worrying on Monday morning rather than over the weekend. You will have saved yourself a few days of worry. Finally, Paul says, if you want peace, ask God to give it to you, as he is the God of peace. When my dad died in a road accident when I was 23, it was a terrible time. But I felt a tremendous sense of peace, which I believe was the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, which Paul mentions in verse 7. Remember, peace is one of the fruits of the Spirit, which God rejoices to grow in our lives. God promises to keep in perfect peace those whose minds are steadfastly focused on him and controlled by his Spirit. Getting to know the God of peace will give us peace, because he is the creator of peace. So in conclusion, we have explored how we might deal with conflict in order to live at peace with each other, and we have considered ways in which we might gain peace in our own lives. I said at the beginning that our thoughts and feelings are disturbed when we lose our peace. In Philippians 4, verse 7, Paul writes that God's peace will guard our minds and hearts, or in other words, our thoughts and feelings. We need God's peace to keep us peaceful. In Philippians 4, verse 9, Paul tells us to put into practice all we have learned. So perhaps we need to be more active when seeking peace, and not just passive, waiting for peace to mysteriously descend upon us. There's a little story that I'd like to read that's from the YouVersion Bible Reading Plan by Tony Evans. It's the one entitled Peace of Christ. It's a story of people on an aeroplane. The story is told of a flight that hit some unusual turbulence, tossing the aeroplane side to side in strong gusts of wind. Clouds looked more like coal, and lightning hit nearby. An eerie silence settled over the passengers in between their shrieks and screams. No one felt safe, except for one small child. He sat there preoccupied with his notebook and pen, drawing a picture of himself climbing a tree on a sun-filled day. To look at him, you never would have guessed he was on a plane in the middle of a storm. A passenger nearby noticed him and wondered how he could feel so calm, so she asked the young boy, "Aren't you afraid?" He just looked up from his paper for a moment, smiled and said, "No." "Why not?" the lady prodded, fingers gripping her seat. "Because my dad is the pilot," he answered matter-of-factly, and then returned to his drawing. At the moment, there is a lot of uncertainty in the world. We might be in for some turbulence, but of one thing we can be certain. God is the pilot. He does not change. He is constant. We can trust him to bring us a peace that the world cannot give. Jesus says in John 14, verse 27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid."